Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Jamie Fowler-White. Jamie has served 10 years as a classroom teacher, an instructional coach, and a CORE advocate with Achieve the CORE. She currently mentors first-time and renewal candidates for the National Board and is a charter member of the National Board Network of Minoritized Educators. Jamie currently serves as an assistant principal in Shelby County Schools in Tennessee. She is the author, co-author of several books, including Educator Reflection Tips, Volume Number 1, The Skin You Are In, Colorism in the Black Community, Second Edition, EduMatches Snapshot in Education 2020, Remote Learning Edition, and Educator Reflection Tips, Volume 2, Refining Our Practice. Jamie blogs at digitalpd4u.com, has a bi-monthly leadership blog on Insight Advance, and writes a monthly blog entitled The Better Mindset at Teach Better Team. Welcome to the podcast, Jamie.
Hi, Dinah. I'm so excited. Thank you so much for inviting me. I love your podcast.
Well, thanks
Nothing
so
like
much.
Like coming out of the trenches.
Yeah. Well, I've reached out to you because I've read a lot of your blog posts on Teach Better. And, you know, I found a lot of great content with those. So I wanted to find out more about you. And we'll start off with your trench story, like I do with everybody else, about a time you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
I just want you to know, this has been the hardest thing for me to nail down. Mm-hmm. I have found myself in the trenches so many times over the years. And it's just that ability to pull yourself out. But the thing I think I will share is during my first job, I write about it at the beginning of volume 2, but not in detail. Mm-hmm. So I had actually spent a couple of years as a substitute at a school where my sister was a third grade teacher. One teacher quit while I was doing a long-term placement, and the principal hired me. She came in, she was like, hey, I have a job for you. And I was like, really? Oh my God, I'm so excited. So it was with a group of second grade students, and she said, the only thing is that I need you to start on Monday, and it was Friday, okay? Mm-hmm. And so over the weekend, my family and I got together. We worked. We got that classroom working. I was there 10 days and was told that I had to leave this environment where everyone, I could go to anyone in the building, ask them a question. Everyone would help you. It was just like the best environment that you could be in. I was thrown into an environment about 15 minutes away, got to the school, met with the principal. She called me in for a meeting. She said, I only have like a couple of things that I want to tell you. She says, don't come and ask me for anything. Do not send it to the office.
Wow.
Yes. This was during a time where my district was trying out different models. There was no curriculum, mm-hmm. so there were no textbooks. And the last thing she told me is that I was going to be teacher number 5 for this group of second grade students.
Oh my.
So I walked in with this group, 2 weeks of experience too, mm-hmm. 10 days. There were children running. There was a child that regularly liked to sit on top of the lockers. Like they kicked, they screamed, they fought. It was just, they were just mad at the world. Mm-hmm. And I just remember I was there for about 10 days and a child asked me, they were like, are you going to leave us too? Because, you know, every time we get a teacher, they always leave us. And I was like, I'm not going anywhere. I will be here every day. I'm here to teach you. I said, y'all have had 4 teachers in front of me. And I'm trying to get you ready for third grade. Mm-hmm. And so I really, if you will work with me, I will work with you. I learned so much about the importance of building relationships with students, having the support of your colleagues and working with them, because I came from an environment that just had, you could go to anyone and they would help you, to going to an environment where I was literally working in isolation. I can't tell you the name of any of the other teachers. Nothing. All they would tell me is that, yeah, just don't send them to the office.
Wow.
But by the end of that year, there were only 3 months left in the school year. And so by the end of that year, I had gotten the students to where they actually believed again in that my teacher really does care for me, loves me, will work for me. But the trauma that those children experienced when they said, well, people were, you're going to give up on us like everybody else gave up on us, mm-hmm. and you're going to leave like everyone else leaves. Like, children should not believe that about being at school. Like, they should know that this is a place where I'm safe, and everyone is going to do what they're supposed to do. There were no rules, there were no textbooks, there was no routine, there was zero culture, like, mm-hmm. and so over the years I've learned that you build the relationships first, and no matter what the culture is outside of the walls of your classroom, you can build the culture that you want, that you know that your students need. And every year since then, even when I move to a new place, I try to make sure that I have that first culture where you're able to go to anyone in a building to get the assistance and the help that you need, because we're that family-oriented type of environment, because I never want anyone to walk into what I had to walk into my first year of teaching. And I often wonder if I had not been told that I could return back to that first job that I had for 2 weeks, the place that I had been for 2 years, I wonder if I would have continued to persevere through that experience, because it was traumatic for me, mm-hmm. as well as the students, because it was like a shell shock. And I just never want any new teacher to go through that. Mm-hmm. You need that, you know, that type of support. So that those 3 months were taught me just so much. And every day when I think about just the hardest day that I think I've ever had, like, it's nothing compared to that experience that I went through for those 3 months, where I felt like I was just out on an island all by myself. And without the support of my administrators, my peers, no one. Mm-hmm. But it made me better. Mm-hmm.
Reflecting back on that, right, and seeing, like, you stayed in education, right? You a lot of people would have kind of seen that there was no support and run. I mean, that's why you were the fifth teacher for that group of students. But the key is that you built those relationships. You know, you said, you know, you'd work with them if they worked with you. So I think that's kind of how you ended up lasting there. And, you know, it's great that, you know, you still are in education. And, you know, there are probably certain schools where a new teacher is kind of just thrown into it still today, unfortunately. And I know there are better supports out there for the new hires, but, you know, there's, it doesn't exist everywhere, and it has to do a lot with school culture. So tell me a little bit about your work with National Board Certification, kind of your background, what subject area you got certified in. And one of my questions would be, is going through all the process to get the National Board Certification worth the work?
It is. So I achieved my National Board Certification the first time in 2008 in the area of middle childhood generalists. So that certifies me as a specialist for students age 7 through 12 in every content area. Is it worth it? It's the best professional development I've ever had. Most of the time when you go to a session, a professional development session, people are telling you all of the things that you should be doing. Instead, National Board Certification, during that process, you are studying your own practice. And so you are analyzing, reflecting on what you do, why you do it, the results, figuring out if what you would do the next time you taught that same lesson, that same content, what would you do differently? Would you actually duplicate that process or just scrap it and just start all over? And it's really about what you learned with about everything that goes on within a teaching day, and talking about what you're going to do to make yourself better, because you want to be an accomplished teacher is what they call it. And accomplished teachers do things like getting to know their students so you can build those relationships, getting to know their families, how you use data, the strategies that you actually use, how you collaborate with colleagues, what you do to help to make your whole school community better. It's all of those things that every teacher strives to do that anyway. It's just you analyzing and writing it down. And so when I was going through the process, I actually had a mentor to support and guide me along the way. The hardest part of achieving National Board Certification is that there is no playbook. There is no guidance. You pay your money and they say, turn these entries in next May. And so once I got my certification, I realized that I never would have gotten it without the guidance and the support of my mentor. As a matter of fact, it's sometimes it's one of my trench stories. The first time I submitted my entries, there were four areas that you have submitted in. I let my mentor read three out of the four, and I passed three out of the four. And the one that I did not pass is the one that my mentor didn't read. She didn't lay eyes on it at all. Like no feedback, no guidance, no nothing. I just remember, and it was hard because I cried. I missed board certification by like 25 hundredths of a point. And so it was literally devastating me. But after a couple of months, I said, well, let me look at it and see. And when I read it, I went, oh my God, I didn't do any of the stuff I was supposed to do in this entry. I don't have any idea what I was thinking. I told my mentor, I will not let you read this one. I said, but I realized, I learned what I did wrong. I was able to look at my own work after I took a step back and say, this is what I should have done. And I didn't do that. And so the next year, you know, I certified with ease. But ever since then, I've been giving back. And I've mentored for free in my district for 4 or 5 years. Then in 2017, the state of Tennessee paid us to mentor. I could mentor people from across the state. So I expanded. I still mentored people, anyone that asked me within my district, I would guide them. And then in 2019, with the National Board affiliate of NAME, the Minoritized Educators, we actually mentor National Board candidates from across the country. And so we just try to give that guidance, because a lot of people, I think a lot more people would go through the process if they actually knew more about it. But no one can tell you about the process unless they've really been through it. But I think every educator should reflect on their own practice, And that's part of the reason that I started writing books, because it's, I think that we depend on a lot of other people to help us to perfect our practice when we really could do it on our own. We just need a little guidance, a little push to help us get there. But as a result of the national board process, I began reflecting every day, and I just do it with such automaticity that at the beginning, I couldn't understand why everybody wasn't doing it. I was like, why can't you do this? Like, I mean, like, you don't see, I see it, you don't see it. And so, you know, that took me into coaching and supporting. And it's just, I love watching that light bulb just pop on in the adults. As you know, how when you're teaching a child and you, when they finally get it, that is what I get to see in adults every day. And it's just the best work that I could ever have. And it just is what keeps me going and just, you know, keeps me at my happiest when I can see other teachers to learn to analyze and perfect their own practice. It's just such an empowering moment. And I wish we could just replicate it just over and over, just all over the world. It'd just be so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's great that you're giving back and kind of learning from what you did when you failed, you know, by such a small margin. And then, you know, that's kind of brought you into the writing that you're doing now. And I wanted to discuss a few of some of your writing. So first, I wanted to discuss the book, The Skin You Are In, Colorism in the Black Community, that talks about microaggressions that occur within the Black community towards individuals of different skin shades. So if you could talk a little bit about kind of, you said you worked on this with your husband as well, and kind of what were some insights that you gained?
So The Skin You Are In is actually based on research that my husband did in his doctoral dissertation. I remember when he told me about the topic that he wanted to write about, and I was like, you want to write about what? Mm-hmm. He was like, I really want to write about this. It's not something that a lot of people talk about. And I really think that this is important work. And so as I was reading through his research, you know, I'm just like in the middle of mm-hmm. the color spectrum. And so in colorism, most people who are at either end of the spectrum. So my husband is very dark, tall, husky, black male. Mm-hmm. My sister is at the lighter skin of the spectrum. And so as he was writing, they began, you know, it opened up like this dialogue that we had never had as a family about their experiences. My sister would get her microaggressive experiences were, you know, you're not black enough. My husband, his family would tell him things like, you better marry a light-skinned girl because so that you can have pretty babies. And he would get comments like that all through his life. And we're almost 50 now, mm-hmm. and he still thinks about those experiences, my sister as well. And people talk about, you know, the ACEs and mm-hmm. those, you know, those experiences that happen between 0 to 17.
Yeah.
And how they, you know, they last throughout their lifetime. People never talk about the effects that colorism actually has on a person throughout their life. My husband is always very conscious, like when he walks into a space, because he knows that people see his color first. And then they are so surprised when they talk to him that he is actually intelligent. Mm-hmm. My sister as well, when she tells people that we grew up in Orange Mound, you know, the first African-American community in the United States. They kind of look at her and say, you grew up where? Mm-hmm. And she's like, yes, like that's my beginning, my home. That's where my mother still lives now. And mm-hmm. so they don't believe it because they say, oh, she's not Black enough, you know, in their back of their minds. And so as I was reading his research, I said, we've got to publish this. And so we published the first edition. And then as I continue to read, I said, well, we really need to give people something that they can use. Mm-hmm. A lot of people like me who've never really experienced colorism won't understand how to start a conversation about it. And so I wrote a companion guide that any organization can use. We're educators, so we take pieces and snippets from each of the different chapters, and then we give companies or educators just a platform that they can use to begin those discussions. Mm-hmm. As you read about like the history of colorism, which dates back to slavery, when the lighter skinned African-Americans were given those nice cushiony types of jobs. And then the darker skinned were out working in the field, mm-hmm. no matter the weather, you know, and that is what started that, that belief that lighter is better. Mm-hmm. And it's not just with African Americans, it's with all of the nationalities of color, mm-hmm. they have that within. Mm-hmm. I have a niece that she would say things like, I'm not the smart Asian. And I was like, mm-hmm. what do you mean you're not the smart Asian? You have like a 99, your lowest average is a 99. She's like, but I'm not, you know, they're in the...
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
The group with the smart Asians. And I was like, no, baby. Yes, you are smart, but just those types of things. And you just wonder, how can we combat like those type of things, because that affects a child's their ability to bond with people, like their sense of self. And it's just not something that has been in the forefront. Mm-hmm. We talk about all kinds of ACEs, but not that one. And so so along with their companion guide, we offer professional development, and we call it colorism, the unspoken ace, because mm-hmm. it is one. It's just mm-hmm. not one that we even think about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's good to know that you guys have that available. And that's something, you know, that I'd heard about that, you know, within the Black community before, but, you know, we don't really, you know, hear as much as you've gone into detail, like, you know, it goes back to that slavery background and also just those, you know, comments that he, you know, endured during childhood, and the fact that, yeah, it's like a trauma that you go through as an ace. And then, you know, that it impacted him so much that he wanted to write his dissertation about that. That's really interesting. I also wanted to talk to you about article or in volume two of Cyber Connection. You wrote about benefits of gamification. So there's a lot of different information in that about the growth mindset, completing virtual assignments, but you focus a lot on gamification, and you're tying a little bit in to your experience with your son and kind of how you saw him learn.
Yes. So a lot of the chapters in volume two mm-hmm. Came about from me looking at the educator lens and the parent lens. Mm-hmm. So my son is 17. Mm-hmm. He's in the 11th grade, and like he games like when I constantly, like if he could be on there for 20 hours out of the day, like he would. when he first started gaming, I was like, he wouldn't eat. Yeah. I mean, we had to we had to maneuver around all of our dinner schedule, wow, and lunch schedule around his gaming.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, oh yes. And so and I was like, what is it about this game that we are having to change our whole life around, yeah, around the game? And so I started doing some research on it. And you know how research is, you read it and you go, that can't possibly be right.
Yeah.
So and so I read specifically research by Stephen Johnson, and mm-hmm, he talks about the cognitive benefits of children gaming.
Mm-hmm.
He even says in his research that it will actually increase, it can increase your cerebral aptitude and increase a student's IQ while they're gaming. And I was like, that is impossible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Talked about how, but when you think about it, when they're gaming, they have to balance like patterns, hand-eye coordination. They're shifting between the visual cues, sometimes looking at a map, memorizing sequences, just all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it simultaneously. Like, mm-hmm, they don't even know they're doing it. They don't even know they're doing it. They are just, and so when you think about how that works, they're also doing it for free.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no, what are they getting at the end? They may level up. Like,
yeah,
that's not a prize. Like, what do you mean? I'm just trying to get to the 20th level.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And so that teaches children, even though, you know, they may get like 3 lives or whatever, and then they lose those lives, but they learn not to do certain things. And so we're learning from our mistakes. That's that growth mindset, like, okay, I didn't make it that time, mm-hmm, but I'm gonna try it over and over and over again until I get it. Like, that is what you want for children in the classroom. And that's what we're trying as educators, to get our children to believe and know that they can do those things. But my son, so when he came down, I was in my writing room, I'm in here now.
Mm-hmm.
And so he came down, I was like, so I'm writing this chapter, and I'm reading this research, and this is what it says about the benefits of gaming. And I was like, so, you know, tell me, you know, what you think about that. And he was like, yes, I love gaming. From gaming, I learned how to collaborate with my peers. He's like, I meet people from all over the world. And he says, you know, you and Dad, you know, you're telling me about the pandemic and how it's affecting people. And he, mm-hmm, was like, but I know about it already. And I knew about it already. Like, one of my friends, mm-hmm, is going, he has COVID, his mom has COVID. And he was like, and every day he logs on just to tell us hello, because he says that he doesn't have the strength to play with us, but he just wants to talk to us. And so every day I log on and talk to him. And he was like, he has some from Canada. He talks to someone in Europe where he plays a game with them. And so he's getting like that global perspective. And, mm-hmm, he was like, you know, we talk about everything while we're on that game. And he says, but in school, he says he doesn't get that holistic type of benefit. He says, mm-hmm, in school is really just about making A's long. And he was like, our teachers don't really, and schooling doesn't really promote that growth mindset that you always are telling me about, to learn from my mistakes and those things. And he says, because, you know, it's all about the number that you make on a test. And he says, I really appreciate, and he talked about two of his teachers, his geometry teacher, who's now his calculus teacher, and his physics teacher. He says, I appreciate that they give me back my test and allow me to self-correct.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at what I did, and then if I can tell them what I learned from that and what the correct answer is, where I made those mistakes, then I can recover some of my points. He says, those are the only two classes that I think promote that gamification, those characteristics, those qualities, that growth mindset that you're always telling me about. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how he wished every educator or every school would adopt that, mm-hmm. because he says he learns the most from him correcting his answers, not from taking the test and seeing the number that he makes, but from being able to go back and look at where he went wrong. And that's where he says he learns the most from. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought that that was just the most profound thing from a 17-year-old, like from a child's perspective. This is what children think. And I just think that if we just spend a little bit more time just kind of talking to the children, there's so much more that we can learn, because mm-hmm. we don't know what the world will be like when they go to work. Mm-hmm. But they actually have been navigating the online platform pre-pandemic through the game. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so for them, their life didn't change at all. My son was like, this is nothing different than any other day. I get to get up and go play my game like I did yesterday. He's like, I just get more time. I get more hours to play the game because we don't have to leave the house. So I'm good. But, you know, whereas adults, we were freaking out like, what are we going to do? I can't leave my house. I'm stuck. Like, I can't do anything. But the children were like, what? You know, we're going to play the game. And I'm going to go to my room and you figure it out. And we're going to go up here and do our thing, you know. Yeah. But gamification has taught them that. So the virtual world, the virtual space, like they already knew how to navigate that. We are behind the curve.
Yeah.
But the children are already there. And and I think that that's one of the those things that, because they were born with technology and they've always had it, mm-hmm. and we're just kind of making our way through it, we really need to own that. And allow the children to teach us what they learn, because I've learned so much from just those conversations with just my own child. Mm-hmm. Imagine if we could just have it with all of the children, just the things that they're thinking and that they're learning, because they see everything, hear everything, and notice way more than we think they do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like you had a table in one of the chapters, digital natives versus digital immigrants. Yeah, and we're, you know, I think you said if you're born in 97 or after, you're the digital native, right? Even though the internet, you know, was widely accessible mid-90s. But yeah, like, I mean, just kind of thinking like, you know, our understanding is like, well, you know, this can't be good for the kid being in their room this long, you know, or, you know, kind of keeping that structure. I totally understand the time to come and eat dinner type thing. I have a 13 year old son who, I mean, he does Minecraft. He's not like involved in one specific game and he doesn't really chat with people that much, but I can see like, you know, that's the network that your son is, you know, those are his friends. And, you know, we have our educator connections, right? And he, you know, connects with these people throughout the world that, you know, they're all interested in that game, but they also are talking about different things. So yeah, mm-hmm. it's kind of hard for us to see through their eyes, right? But
yes.
But I can get the benefits of that, like the cognitive, right? They don't know what they're doing multiple tasks at the same time. But yeah, and then that ties into that learning from your mistakes. And when I was in the classroom, you know, I did do that. You know, I had those kids correct their mistakes and there was the opportunity to do retakes at the last school I taught at. So that, you know, I think, as you said, that needs to be embraced more as a learning tool, you know, to revise, you know, if you teach English, you always do the drafts, but even if you're mm-hmm. teaching a different subject area, like learn from your mistakes, figure out what the answer was instead of giving them the answer. So yeah, that's, I really like that story and kind of how your research, you know, from learning more about what your son likes to do, helped open your eyes to why this is such a popular thing for the youngsters, right?
Yes.
So I also was intrigued by just the fact that you have so many different hats. You know, you're blogging, you write a lot of articles, and you do your national board mentoring duties, along with being a full-time assistant principal. So you talked to me in the pre-chat a little bit about being having a high-performance planner that you've started using.
Yes. So I think it was in November. I know I wrote a blog about this for Teach Better in November when I say that my world kind of imploded. Mm-hmm. It was, I think I had been back at work full time for about 30 days. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when the pandemic first started, we had like all this time mm-hmm. and we were like, what are we going to do? I was like, what am I going to do to fill my day?
Yeah.
And so writing became my outlet. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't working full time. Like we were just doing little part-time things because everyone was at home.
Yeah.
But around November, you know, I had to go to work, like go physically go into the building and start my regular, you know, 9 to 5 or 9 to 9, or, you know, how educators are, you know, we never have just those regular work hours. And I had gotten a book contract with Connect Ed and told them I would write a book for them by December. Teach Better had asked me to begin writing a blog for them. Insight Advance was like, can you write some tips for leadership? And I was like, oh yeah, I can do all this stuff. Yeah, I got it. I can do this. I can still meet for my video chat with National Board. I can still work my 9 to 5. Oh my goodness. So it was around Thanksgiving where I had all these different little timers set in my phone, and every time a bing would hit it, I would just cringe. I was like, oh my God, I have another meeting. I can't believe I have another meeting. Oh, and I was like, I can't do it. And so I turned off like all of those alerts. I was like, I'm going to have to find a different way. I can't do this. Rob Breyer, he's one of the people in our administrative mastermind. He was talking to us about this planner that he was using. He was like, it's just the best thing ever. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I'll give it a try. You know, I've never been like a little planner type of person, but it is the best thing ever. So in this planner, it lets you set your must-do things that you have to do every day, your can-do things that you need to keep in the back of your mind. It asks you like 10 questions, like what kind of person do you want to be today? Who can you help today? Who needs you to be on your A game? What might trip you up during the day? And how are you going to face that? Mm-hmm. If you are hit that wall, that obstacle, like what can you do as a workaround? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, like you'll know that you were successful because you've done like these things. Mm-hmm. And then it gives you like your times, your hourly times. And what I began doing is charting out each of the things that I have to do so that, and spacing them out and saying, I know that I need to write this article. I know that I need to observe this teacher by this date, and charting out all of my different responsibilities so that I would know that I could block out time to work on those things. And with that, I also had to kind of limit some of my virtual interactions mm-hmm. so that I would have time to do the in-person interactions yeah. like with my mother and my husband and my mm-hmm. child, you know, who really need me. The planner itself kind of taught me what I was thinking when all those alarms were binging.
Yeah.
It was that I was thinking there's not enough time in my day to do all these things, mm-hmm. but I really want to do all these things. Mm-hmm. But the planner, once I actually wrote down and planned out and gave myself enough time to do things, mm-hmm. I mean, I just realized that there really is enough time to do all things. I just know that For at least 10 years, my husband and I had been talking about writing a book. Mm-hmm. And we just never, we said there was never enough time. And if we had to choose between our professional and our personal goals, we would choose a professional every time.
Yeah.
And I just, and I don't want to keep doing that.
Yeah.
As I reflect on my life, I just believe that there is enough time. Mm-hmm. And so I do like a 2 weeks on, and then I'll schedule myself for like an entire weekend off.
Mm-hmm.
Because I find that, you know, when you're tired, you can't really produce your best work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually my son, I was sitting in front of the computer the first time I wasn't scheduling time off. And I was like, he was like, what are you doing? I said, I'm trying to write an article, but I just can't think. He was like, it's because you're tired.
Yeah.
He's like, you're never going to get anything done when you're tired. And so, and he's right. And I'll go and take a nap. And then I wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh, that's what I should be writing about.
Yeah.
And so you just have to balance, mm-hmm. you know, some time for yourself, time with your family, and then schedule all those other things. And that's what got me through, because I wasn't, it was a lot of writing. And and my friends jokingly call me now. They're like, oh, what are you doing? Are you writing something? What are you writing about now? And I was like, no, I'm sitting on the couch watching TV. I'm not writing anything. Oh, okay. Well, we just figured that you were going to be writing something right now. I'm like, no, not today. Not tomorrow. I scheduled some time to write. But today I have time to just to talk to you. So, they jokingly asked me that. But writing, it makes me happy. And mm-hmm. so I just want to write as much as I can.
Yeah, and that's, I get that. I'm along the same mindset. Like, just, I mean, I put the things on my phone, right? And I don't necessarily have a Bing, because I keep my phone muted. But, you know, I if I look at the week ahead, like, I'll see, okay, on Wednesday, I set aside a little bit of time to write, or, you know, time to do a pre-chat with somebody, right? So, like, you know, I'll put aside those, you know, half hour or those hour slots of time, right? And I think if you can view it, like, do that preview of the week, right? And that way you kind of know what to expect. But then you're also, you know, if you have consistency in, you know, I'm going to do this exercise routine these days of the week as well, right?
Yes.
Or I'm going to block out time to, you know, spend with family or whatever, you know. So, like, I'm like you, I want to do it all. I want to be involved with a lot of things, right? But, you know, like, sometimes, like, I'm in an executive board for a group of foreign language teachers in Colorado, but, you know, their meetings are only once every 6 weeks. So they had their 3 hour long meeting this morning. So, you know, some things, yeah. So today I've had a lot of Zoom, but, you know, those things aren't that often. Right. So, like, mm-hmm. if you know, okay, well, certain Saturdays are going to be busier than others, right?
So, yes.
But yeah, I like that planner idea. And I do have a full focus planner. I haven't used it a ton this year, but you know, I think it helps that you set your goals as well. Like, what are your quarterly goals? I know mm-hmm. there's several people, like Justin Bader with the Principal Center has a fortnight planner he puts out, you know, so there's a lot of different tools people can get and use. And, you know, some people say their phone's enough, but like you said, you like writing in the paper planner. So.
Yeah, the phone was not enough for me, and it had been for years. So yeah. I just recommend you finding whatever works for you. I guess it probably maybe would have worked if I had put my phone on mute.
You just really got tired of that ping. Yeah, if I have my phone near me, I'll see, okay, it says I need to do this. But then I look, you know, I'll look at the beginning of the day. I'll do my meditation, the 10-minute meditation, because that helps to start the day. You know, and then I'll look at, you know, okay, these are the extra, you know, the extra things. So, you know, but, you know, and I think it gives you a self, like you're talking about, your writing gives you a sense of, you know, happiness. And I think the things like blogging, like I'm doing or the podcast, is those things give me, you know, a self-worth. They fill my cup, like, you know, like that does for you as well. So, mm-hmm. Well, I've really enjoyed our conversation and just learning more about some of the things that you've written and your experience of that first year of teaching. Out of everything we discussed today on the podcast, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
Change is good. There is always enough time, and never be afraid to make yourself better.
Right.
It's one of those. Yes. I think that's.
Where can people find you online and connect with you?
I'm on Twitter at 4J's and 821. They can connect with me on my blog, my podcast, or my Facebook page at Digital PD for You. They can email me if they want to. It's just jwhite.mbct2008@gmail.com. You can send me a direct message on any of those platforms. It really is, along with writing, helping teachers to grow and learn and make themselves better is one of those other things that just fuels and my soul and just fills me each day. So just anytime you want to reach out, I'm here.
Great. Well, I'll include all that information in the show notes. Well, it's so great to talk to you and get to know you and have you on the podcast today. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Bye.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.